Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you do what you can with what you have wherever you are. This is a practical preparedness podcast. I don't go tinfoil hat on you. I try to keep things rooted in common sense. That's kind of me. I'm a common sense kind of guy, just raised with a lot of practicality. If you like all that tinfoil hat zombie apocalypse stuff, there are other podcasts out there that might fit your listening pleasure a little bit better, but not this one. Just keep it, like I said, rooted in common sense. Coming to you from the today's Survival Show mobile studio. My old Honda here, my paid-for Honda, as I'm cruising down the freeway down I-37, making a short trip from San Antonio to Corpus Christi, Texas. So I want to start off with an apology. I'm very sorry that I've been away so long and haven't put up a show in a few weeks. There's an explanation for that. I got really busy at work. You know, if you're relatively new to this show, this is not my full-time job, folks. It's just a hobby. I'm a prepper. I do like to prepare. I like to make sure that I'm prepared for as many disasters as I possibly can, because you never know when the stink is going to hit the fan. And you know what? I mean, the stink hitting the fan for people can be a lot of things. It can be something as simple as losing a job, and that's disastrous enough all by itself, isn't it? Or it could be a major thing, major disaster. So I try to get ready for all of them. But I also have a life. I have a life outside of prepping and outside of some of the other activities that I like to do on the side. I'm in the hotel security business, so I'm out running around in two states selling hotel security products, guest room locks, outside door access control, front desk security, stuff like that. So that's what I do nowadays to keep the bills paid. So I was real busy with that, and then I spent nearly 5 days up in Centerton, Arkansas at the MAG 40 class, which that's what this is about. If for some of you who don't know, MAG 40, MAG stands for Massad Ayoub Group, and 40 means it's a 40-hour class. It was a long 10-hour days. It was a long, grueling class, folks, but let me tell you, it was worth every single minute. MAG 40, if you're a gun enthusiast, and if you believe in carrying a firearm as I do, you need to go to MAG 40. Just figure out a way to get there, folks. I'm telling you, it is that good. Now, I don't normally make today's survival show about guns. Typically, I don't talk too much about firearms because I do another podcast for that. I'm also the host of the Handgun World podcast over at handgunworld.com, and you can search it on iTunes as well. Just search Handgun World on iTunes and you'll find my show. That is all about guns and concealed carry and competition shooting and firearms training and ammo and all the different types of guns and all that. This show, I typically don't get into all that, but this episode is an exception because it relates to preparedness quite a bit. So I want to give a little introduction here, and then you're going to hear from Massad Ayoub himself. I did an interview with him. The explanation I want to give is this is all part of prepping. And one of the things that I learned at that show is how to prepare ahead of time, how to better prepare ahead of time for disasters. I mean, let's face it, violence is a disaster. And you know what? That show was 3/4 legal stuff and 1/4 shooting. It was about how to handle the unfortunate circumstance if you should find yourself in a violent encounter. It's how to set yourself up to make sure you're well represented in case that happens. How to set yourself up with a good self-defense lawyer that will be there to serve you if something happens. And how to deal with the aftermath of a violent encounter. And as I sat there for 4 days, it was about 7 hours of classroom lecture every day and 2 to 3 hours of shooting for 4 straight days. As I sat there, I thought to myself, you know, this translates into so many other areas of my life. I mean, even as I drive down the freeway here in my car talking to you, I have to make sure that I do myself a little pre-flight check, you know, kind of like a pilot does when he gets in an airplane and starts to fly. You got to do a pre-flight check. Make sure you have everything that I need for the trip. I double-checked my 72-hour emergency kit that I keep in the trunk of my vehicle all the time. There were some things that I still had in there for winter months, and I got a little lazy and forgot to check it. So I got all that done before making this trip, and now it's more of a spring and summertime 72-hour emergency kit because, after all, it's spring and summer. So, you know, you got to carry different things in your emergency kit. And by the way, if you don't have a vehicle emergency kit, you should make one. You should make one, especially if you do a lot of driving. But anyway, the thought process that goes into responsibly carrying a gun also translates into everyday life. And you know, it wasn't all about carrying a gun. Masad Ayoub talked a lot in that class basically about your mindset. You know, your mindset about self-defense, and do you have a plan? He spent a lot of time talking about that. And the way he puts it, I mean, you know, Masad Ayoub has spent 39 or 40 years as an expert witness in self-defense cases. He's one of the premier expert witnesses in self-defense. Now, he's been doing this stuff since the 70s. And he's made himself a very good living, a very good reputation. And, you know, he prepares us so well in the class. One of the things, I'm trying to talk about this without giving away proprietary information, because he did give us a lot of proprietary information that he only shares with students that come through the class. So I'm trying to do this podcast, folks, to get the point across without giving away some stuff. Now, I did about a half an hour interview with Masad Ayoub, and that's coming up. You're going to hear that shortly. But I want to cover three things that I can cover with you. Without violating any of the confidentiality that was talked about in that class. And if you're taking notes, if you're in a position where you can write this down, great. Otherwise, if not, you'll probably want to rewind this and listen to this a little bit more. But I want to talk about three things called ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. Masad Ayoub presented it to us as AOJ. AOJ. Ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. I don't care if you're carrying a gun on your hip or not. If you carry pepper spray, if you carry a knife, if you carry a taser gun, whatever, if you've got a coupon, even if you've got a flashlight with one of those crenulated bezels on it that you can also use as a self-defense weapon, if you have a self-defense pen, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have to take into account ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. Those are basically the three hallmarks as to when it's justified to use self-defense. Unfortunately, we see a lot of cases, not just in the United States. Now, I know I have a lot of international listeners to this program as well. There are a lot of cases out there where people are not justified in using self-defense. And it's very important because we have such a litigious society out there. I wish it wasn't that way. I really do. I wish it wasn't that way. But it is. So let's just deal with what we have, okay? Let's deal in reality. You'll notice that I approach survivalism and prepping from a reality standpoint. You know, what's going on today? I don't approach it from how I wish it was. Because, you know, you can spend the rest of your life saying, oh boy, I wish things were different. Well, guess what? They may not ever get to be the way you like them to be. So what is reality? And the reality is all three of those entities must be present for you to be justified in using self-defense lethal force. And a lot of people think that lethal force means a gun. I'm here to tell you there's more than just a gun that can be lethal force. A knife is lethal force, is it not? Even a sharp pen could be lethal force if you use it correctly. Think about this. A person's fists or feet can be used as lethal force. Look at the very well-trained martial artists out there. Okay, if you're well-trained in martial arts, you know what I'm talking about. You know that your body, your hands, your feet, your knees, your elbows can all be used as lethal objects. So we have to quit assuming that just because somebody was unarmed, we have to quit assuming that that person is not lethal. And I think you guys know what I'm talking about, don't you? A very high-profile self-defense case that's in the news right now. Okay, I'm not going to get too much into that. You know, you'd have to be sleeping under a rock to know to not know what I'm talking about right now. But what really frustrates me and pisses me off, actually, this frustrates me and really upsets me. I'm sorry, folks. As I'm thinking about it, I got a little mad there. I hate all the media reporting saying that one of those guys was unarmed. Well, yeah, he was unarmed with a gun, but it doesn't mean that he wasn't lethal. It doesn't mean that he couldn't be using his hands, feet, fists, elbows, knees, whatever, in a lethal manner that can kill someone. We don't know the facts. Perhaps the facts will all emerge as we watch this whole thing play out. But I think it's very likely that the young man who got killed probably was, and again, I'm going to try not to speculate too much, there's a possibility, I'm not saying definitely, but there's a possibility he may have been using lethal force. So let's lose the thinking that just because somebody is, quote, unarmed and doesn't have a gun or a knife or anything else that is considered a weapon, let's quit assuming that they're not dangerous or that they couldn't be dangerous. One of the things that Masoud Ayoub talked about is disparity of force. Disparity of force. If you're writing this down, think about that. Disparity of force. Does your aggressor have what's called a disparity of force? Does he have an advantage over you? In other words, is he a whole lot larger than you? If someone's 6'4", 265 pounds, and this thug is attacking a 5'2" woman who weighs 150, that's disparity of force, even if none of them are armed. That's disparity of force. If it's 3-on-1, that's disparity of force, even if nobody is armed with a gun or a weapon. That's disparity of force. If someone's pointing a loaded gun at you with their finger on the trigger threatening to kill you, and all you have is a pocket knife in your hand, that's disparity of force. Now, I'm going to talk about ability, opportunity, and jeopardy, the three most important things I want you to recommend, or want you to remember, and the three most important things for you to take away from this podcast. But disparity of force means your life could be in danger. So let's talk about ability, first of all. Does the person have the ability to cause grave bodily harm or death to the innocent person? That's pretty much what Masoud Ayoub explained as ability. Does the person have the wherewithal? Do they have the ability to carry out their act? In other words, are they in good enough shape to cover 21 feet, for example? It's proven that someone who's in pretty good shape can cover 21 feet in about 1.5 seconds. There's been a lot of tests on that, and it's true. Somebody who's in relatively decent shape can cover 21 feet. If they want to attack somebody, they can cover 7 yards in about 1.5 seconds. So if you think you're good with a gun, for example, if you think you're a fast draw, can you get the gun out and can you get a couple rounds on target in 1.5 seconds? Because if someone's 7 yards away from you, you're going to have to be able to do that. Think about that. Think about that. That's proven over and over and over again. That's why there's a concept out there called the 21-foot rule. 21-foot rule. Try to keep people that you think could be bad guys 21 feet away or more. You can't always do it. It doesn't work out that way. But do they possess the ability? You have to ascertain that. Next is opportunity. Is there an opportunity for them to harm you? They might be able to. They may have a gun. They might have a knife. They could be 6'5", 260 pounds, and you're 5'2", 150. But if that person does not have the ability, in other words, if they're quite a ways away from you, if they're on the other side of a hallway from you, at the time that they're on the other side of that hallway, in other words, if there's a barricade between you and the other person, they may not have the ability. Okay, there's an example. All right, you might have what's commonly called cover. You know, cover. I'm not talking about something that stops bullets. I'm just talking about some kind of a barricade, a doorway, possibly a concrete wall, Something like that, between you and the attacker. Well, think about it. The attacker might be 6'5", 260 pounds, so he has the ability, but he doesn't have the opportunity yet because you've got a wall between you and the attacker. Let's say it's a concrete wall because, you know, just a regular wood wall or a regular drywall, they can shoot through that. But is the opportunity there? Here's another example. If someone is 100 feet away from you and he's got a big knife, he might have the ability to hurt you or kill you, but there's no opportunity. He's 100 feet away. All he's got is a knife. I don't think that any reasonable jury would think that at that point when he's 100 feet away, he could be screaming and yelling, "I'm going to kill you! I'm going to kill you, sucker!" And he could have this machete in his hand saying, "I'm going to kill you, sucker!" And that would fall into ability and jeopardy. I'm going to get into jeopardy pretty soon. But it does not fall into opportunity. He doesn't have the opportunity yet. Now, if he gets closer, if he starts coming closer and closing in on you fast, and he's 100 feet away, then 75, then 50, well, okay. As he starts getting inside of 50 feet, the opportunity is still quite not there, but it's getting closer, isn't it? And closer and closer. If he gets to 30 feet, it's starting to get serious now. And think about it. I said a person in pretty good shape can cover 21 feet in 1.5 seconds, 2 seconds if they're slow. If you don't believe me, go out and test that. Stand 21 feet away from someone. Have them hold just a stick in their hand. Okay, you don't want to do this with a real knife, but have them hold a stick in their hand that simulates a knife. And have somebody else with a timer or stopwatch say, "Go!" And see how long it takes that person 21 feet away from you to get within distance where they could stab you to death. It's going to be 1.5 to 2 seconds. So is the opportunity there? Okay, does the person have the opportunity? I mean, here's another example. Let's say you're sitting in your car. You're in your vehicle. Doors are locked, windows are rolled up. Somebody's outside your car with a knife. Not a baseball bat, with a knife. Okay, they don't have the opportunity yet, in my opinion. They might have the ability because they got a knife in their hand. Maybe they're a big person, or maybe they mean bodily harm. But a knife against a car, I don't think they have the opportunity yet. Baseball bat could be something different, maybe. You know, if they smash in your window or smash in your side window, yeah, then you could probably say at that point now they have the opportunity. So, do they have the ability? Do they have the opportunity? And finally, jeopardy. Is your life actually in jeopardy? All right? I mean, you could have ability and opportunity, but you don't have jeopardy. In other words, this person could be big enough, they could be armed enough, there could be an opportunity there, but they still haven't posed a threat to you. Okay? They might have a gun, but they didn't draw it. Well, your life's not in danger. If the person threatens he's going to get his gun, okay, he may have the ability, and he may have the opportunity. He might be close enough to you where he could shoot you. But let's say he's just got his hand on the gun. His hand's resting on the grip, and he's yelling at you, "I'm going to kill you." And his hand is on the grip of the gun, but it's not drawn. The gun has not come out of his holster yet, or his pants. If he's a gangster thug, he's just going to have it stuck in his pants, like a lot of gangster thugs do. Your life's not in jeopardy yet, folks. It's not. You got to think about these things. If you had a gun, too, and you pulled it out, and you shot him, and he never drew his gun, your life was not in jeopardy. You could be in some trouble when you get to trial. He had the ability. The opportunity was there. But your life yet was not in jeopardy. However, if all three of these things come together, if the aggressor has the ability and the opportunity is there, and your life is in danger, or the life of a loved one that's with you, then you have the right to use self-defense. Then you have the right to use lethal force. But, you know, and you're probably hearing me talk and you're thinking, "Wow, you mean I gotta decide all this in, you know, a couple seconds or less than a couple seconds?" Yeah. Yeah. And I learned so much from this class. You know, folks, this only took me, what, 10 to 15 minutes to explain it to you? Masada, you went into 4 days of great detail. From his years and years and years of experience as an expert witness, he went into years of, or he gave us years of experience in 4 days. So it's a lot more than just ability, opportunity, and jeopardy, because, you know, there's going to be a lot to deal with in the aftermath, and I might make a separate podcast out of that, the aftermath of a self-defense, not just a self-defense shooting, but even if you use a less lethal weapon. So, gang, you got to be careful, especially it depends on where you live. You know, there's some states in the United States a lot more litigious than others. Litigious means they like to litigate a lot more in some places, and you got a lot of oppressive laws. There are states in this country, folks, unfortunately, I hate to admit it, but it's true, there are states in this United States of America that don't believe that citizens have the right to self-defense. And I'm not just talking about gun rights. They don't believe in the disparity of force. There are states where it doesn't matter if your attacker has disparity of force. You still have to retreat, and you still are going to be prosecuted heavily, even if you try to defend yourself. I'm serious. There are states, it does not matter if the person is bigger. As a matter of fact, there are states that have very oppressive laws that simply say you cannot use more force than your attacker. Can you believe that? Here's somebody that possesses the ability, the opportunity, and the jeopardy to kill you. But the state says, well, you can't use overwhelming force. In other words, you can't use more force than they have. If they're trying to threaten you with a knife, you can't shoot them with a gun. That's just BS, folks. But anyway, all three of those have to come together. Ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. If they do, and you're justified, the chances are very good, even no matter what state you live in, the chances are very good if you have good legal representation, you're going to come out, I'm not going to say okay, but you're going to come out a lot better than somebody who didn't think this stuff through. Okay? Now, there's a whole lot more, and as I go through my notes over the next few weeks, I'll probably put out some more podcasts. But just a quick little intermission here. And after the intermission, you'll hear an interview that I did with Masoud Ayoob himself. Masoud Ayoob wrote the book In the Gravest Extreme. If you've never read it, I don't care if you carry a gun or not. From a self-defense standpoint, you should read In the Gravest Extreme. It's a fantastic book. It's an old one, but it's an oldie but goodie. And if you Google Masoud Ayoob on YouTube, also if you go to MasoudAyoobGroup.com, that's Masoud, M-A-S-S-A-D, Ayoob, A-Y-O-O-B. He's from Syria. I'm fairly sure he was born here in the United States. I can't remember. I think he was. But his aunt, yeah, his, I think it's his grandparents came over here from Syria. But MasoudAyoobGroup.com. Go to his website and check all that out. So just a quick intermission. Listen to this intermission, by the way. Listen to this public service announcement. Let's just listen carefully to what's being said in this intermission, and I'll be right back with my interview with Masoud Ayoob. Stay tuned.
Well, yeah, it's getting tough out there. Yeah, no doubt. I work in home invasions, mostly. Some murder, occasional rape, and I'm a huge advocate of gun control. Absolutely. Competition is stiff, and it doesn't help that every time I kick in a door or smash a window, that I face the possibility of being shot and killed. Listen, the fact is, allowing citizens to own guns creates a hostile work environment for me and my associates. No one should have to work under those conditions. I say make them all illegal. Absolutely. Make all gun ownership illegal. I mean, I break the law for a living. I'm a professional, so it doesn't really bother me. I mean, but personally, knowing that most homeowners don't have guns, that would make me a lot more comfortable, more confident, and it would surely increase productivity. No doubt. No doubt.
Right, you listen. Your local violent criminals work hard and put their lives on the line every time they attempt to murder, rape, abduct, or assault a member of the citizenry. They desperately need your help. With your support, there may finally come a day when a violent criminal can have his way with you or someone you love without the fear, anxiety, and stress caused by knowing there's a possibility his victim might be armed. Please show your support by voting for stronger anti-gun legislation, because criminals prefer unarmed citizens.
Masada Yuve joins me. Mass, thanks for in advance for your time.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Good to finally have you in one of our classes, Bob.
Yeah, this is great. You know what, Mass, you're running this. This is intense. 2 days, we're halfway through. This is intense stuff.
We warned you it was going to be an immersion course. We found over the years, I started doing this as Monday through Friday, 40 hours, 5 8-hour days. And I found real quick, for most people, the problem was not the tuition, the problem was the time. And a whole week off work with the limited vacations most folks have, you're taking something kind of selfishly for yourself instead of family time. We found everybody who was serious could get 2 days off and a weekend. Mm-hmm. So we found the 4 10-hour days, 2 weekdays, abutting to a weekend, just made it a whole lot more doable for a whole lot more people.
Well, that's like me, because all I had to take was 2 vacation days. That's a lot easier to swing with the boss than it is a whole week.
Amen. So you know what we're talking about, brother.
I know, but this is great. If anybody's on the fence about coming to this class, do it quickly. There's another one in September coming up here in Arkansas for the people in this part of the country.
Yeah, John Hardaway has been a wonderful host. This is the second class he's done with me, and we found he's just great. The guy's funny as hell and a fine instructor on his own. A great coordinator and organizer, and with true Southern hospitality, a genuinely fine host, and
John's
a fine shot as well.
I haven't seen that yet.
Believe you.
We're going to see it tomorrow, right?
You'll see it just before you shoot your final qualification when the staff does the PACES.
Oh, the PACE Center, that's right. That's right. Well, I wanted to get together with you because one listener had a question. He called it in. And it was, you were about the only one I felt that would be really super qualified to answer it. And his name is Mike from Delaware, and I know that Mike's going to be listening to this. His question is, his wife is deaf, and his wife wants to get her concealed carry license. And he wanted to know, what does his wife need to do since she's deaf and the two of them talk in sign language? What does she need to be aware of if she should have to use her gun in self-defense?
First, she'll still have to verbalize as best she can with the assailant, with commands like don't move and things of that nature. She'll have to be much more acutely aware of keeping her head on a swivel once the gun comes out, to be able to see on angles around her and behind her, not only to make sure the opponent that she's taken at gunpoint or perhaps even had to shoot doesn't have an accomplice, but that another armed citizen or a responding police officer is not coming up behind her.
That's what I was wondering. And what should she do to show the police officer she's the good guy?
If the gun does not absolutely need to be out, if, let's say, she shot the perpetrator and the perpetrator's down, put the darn thing away. You don't want to be setting it down.
Back in the holster?
Definitely back in the holster. Or if you have the type of concealment rig that doesn't allow reholstering, which unfortunately some people use, get it into a pocket, a purse, or concealed in a waistband.
Would laying it on the ground be all right?
I would not recommend that, because somebody who didn't understand who was who might run up and grab the gun, and that would create a nightmarish series of problems.
Okay.
The perpetrator himself might revive and either reach for his own gun or reach for hers.
Yeah, that's true.
Or some idiot, particularly in an urban environment, dropping a gun on the street in some cities is like dropping a bag of gold.
Yep.
Somebody's going to grab it and run. Maintain control. I would advise her to, as much as possible, get herself into a corner where she's got some cover, she has some escape avenue, some egress, and if she's only got 90 degrees to cover, can much more easily scan and make sure she sees an incoming person, an incoming good guy, before they see her. If they come up behind her and she's suddenly startled and she turns with a gun in her hand, she fits the profile of an armed lethal assailant and can expect to be shot.
Well, I know one of the things that Mike is worried about is she can't hear what a responding officer is telling her because she's deaf.
All the more reason she needs to be in, I would suggest, a right angle corner with about a 90 degree approach area where she can scan, see the officer in time, have her hands up, wave to the officer, and make it clear she's the victim.
So she should reholster and then have her hands up and wave to the officer?
I would have the hands where they could be seen, not necessarily a surrender position, which a lot of cops would associate with, wow, not only a criminal but a well-conditioned one. He puts his hands up when he sees me. But the waving to the officer, beckoning the officer toward you.
Okay.
Okay, these are the movements that we associate with the good guy and the good gal.
Okay.
And would
That's
probably,
what he wanted to know, maybe.
Yeah, would probably minimize her chance of a mistaken identity situation.
I've heard some people say that she should carry something with her or have something that's a visual identification. Is there such a thing, or is that not a good thing?
Not really. The trouble with that, the so-called concealed carry badge is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Because it absolutely leaves you open to impersonating a police officer. And if you ask anyone who carries one, they'll first give you the disingenuous answer, oh, I carry that, so I won't be shot. And you then ask the litmus test question, why do you think they won't shoot you because you're holding the badge? Because they'll think I'm a police officer? Thank you, no further questions. You've just confessed to impersonating a cop.
A police officer, yeah.
The other thing you've got to realize is the fake badges are associated with rapists, with child molesters, and will utterly destroy your credibility.
Okay, so she doesn't want to do anything like that.
I'd suggest have a little folding card wallet like you might have for some business identification with the plastic clear window, and hold that up. You're holding it up the way an officer would hold up their credentials.
Okay.
It is a government-issued credential.
Okay.
You're not impersonating an officer because no badge is involved, and it gives you the best of both worlds.
It's a good idea.
You want to have it where you can reach it as quickly as a guy could pull his wallet out of his jeans, not the way a quintessential, typical television housewife would rummage in her purse for 5 minutes to find it.
Okay. Well, now, another interesting question is, how is she going to call 911? Because she communicates with sign language.
I would recommend, see if there's got to be something in the world of the deaf that allows a pre-printed or pre-recorded message to be sent.
Well, do you know, does 911 accept text messages?
This will vary. I do not. I don't believe the 911 itself will get you to a text.
Okay.
It would not be a bad idea for her or Mike himself to contact at least the police department where they live, and particularly the dispatch center, and ask them what their recommended protocols are for the deaf. They are the ones who would most know that and be on top of that.
That's a good point. Yeah. The recommended protocol for a deaf person to contact 911.
Okay. Which is sufficiently outside my scope that right now, without research, I can't answer it.
Okay.
But I would imagine any school for the deaf, any dispatch center that deals with deaf people, hearing impaired people, would have some sort of an answer for her.
Okay. All right.
They taught me in captain school, always defer and delegate anything you can't answer.
You just did a good job of that, Mass.
It is my life.
Okay, the other one that I wanted to talk to you about is another listener contacted me, and he said, Bob, he told me about an incident where approximately 40 feet in front of his house the other day, he saw a man and a woman in a pretty violent altercation. Basically, the man was physically abusing the woman. And his name is Brandon. I don't think Brandon knew if that was his wife, girlfriend, someone he met 5 minutes ago, sister, cousin, whatever. And he said he was worried about her life because the man was big
She was small. She was being overpowered. And he said he retrieved his firearm, went to the scene, didn't use his firearm. But my first thought in that would be, don't get involved because you don't know the situation, right?
I would have to agree with that. If you're worried that the woman is going to be injured, I would have the gun where I could reach it. I would have distance and cover, and I would shout in a command voice for the man to step away from the woman and stop beating her. And I would have dialed 911 before doing that.
Well, he said he did dial 911. He dialed 911, and it was taking forever for police to get there. And to what Brandon was telling me is he didn't want this woman getting hurt or being killed.
Okay, the first thing you want to do is once you've called 911, don't hang up. If they say, all right, we're sending police, say, I wish to keep the line open.
Okay.
If nothing else, the authorities are recording.
Okay.
Now, one thing any cop can tell you, the nature of domestic disputes, particularly with chronically battered women, is such that the monster who is physically destroying them has beaten them down into what the psychologist Lenore Walker called learned helplessness. They have the sense that no one is going to save me. My future is dependent on pleasing this man. I will take the pain. I will take the suffering. And now someone is trying to hurt him. Wow, if I attack that person, he will be grateful to me and he will love me again.
Is that why they sometimes turn on a responding officer?
More than sometimes. It's literally syndromatic. They do not see you as the white knight come to save them from the dragon. They see you as a threat to the person they have, the abuser they have bonded with, the way a hostage bonds with the hostage taker in Stockholm Syndrome.
I mean,
it's
pretty sick, but you're probably right. I mean, that just sounds sick, but...
It sounds sick to you because you're a strong man. It might sound sick to Gail because she's a strong woman. It does not sound anything but ordinary to those of us who've dealt with battered people and subjugated chronic victims.
Okay.
Many of whom are second and third generation victims of this.
Well, Brandon said he called 911. He did contact them first. Was it a decent idea for him to retrieve his pistol and go closer to the scene or not?
It's a decent idea to have the pistol because people who violently beat women in public are expressing aberrant behavior in a violent way and will often escalate. So we've got all the predictors there that this could be a violent situation. One thing with the getting close, if you have to get a little bit closer to see what's happening without sacrificing cover, I can see that. One thing that I've seen over the years, Bob, if it comes out all right, you're the hero. You're going to be in tomorrow's edition of the New York Daily News or the New York Sun.
That you saved
the life. Yes, heroic Samaritan rescues fair maiden from dragon.
Right.
Somebody gets hurt. You have to kill this guy in an anti-gun city, or she turns on you like a rabid dog. You become the self-appointed, crazed, vigilante gun nut who must be made an example of.
Okay.
It ain't fair, but it's how it works.
But that's the way it works.
Sadly, the other thing is, no matter how much the judge reads the law to the jury, the average juror, remember, during jury selection, the people like you and most of your listeners will have been removed from the panel by opposing counsel.
Yeah, I don't think that I would ever be seated on a jury.
Yeah, you're not getting the jury of your peers.
Right.
The jury you're going to get is going to be very vulnerable to the argument that you left a safe place and went looking for trouble, yeah, and therefore became the instigator.
Which we all know of a high-profile case that's out there right now about that.
I won't be discussing that one, but it is pretty hard to avoid that case in America in second quarter 2012.
Yeah,
as we record this.
So Mass does this. I've received this question before. Does a concealed carry holder have a right to protect another life if it's not his own?
That would depend. You'll find state to state. Some states have actually codified it that you have a right to protect a member of your family, you have a right to protect a member of your household, And if this is taking place in a business you own or even manage,
yeah.
you have a right, and some might argue a duty, to protect the customers.
Right.
There is never a duty for the private citizen to protect a third-party stranger. The right to do so can arise, but here's the deal. If it happens in my jurisdiction, and under color of law, I yell, "Police, get away from that woman," and he and I wind up in a fight and I end up hurting him, no matter what he says, I'm going to have recorded that I was dispatched to that scene. I may have the dash cam strategically placed on my vehicle to catch it all, to back me up and all that. Mm-hmm. If I don't, I'll certainly have the dash cam microphone on, so the sound of the encounter and everything that was said will be recorded.
Right.
And if it turns out she was the psycho female mugger trying to rob the male that she accepted a ride with, and the fight is happening at the roadside when he tries to put her out of the car.
Right. Which could
basically
be a case, yeah.
I have the good faith defense. I was dispatched as an employee of the municipal government to this emergency call. I did under the Supreme Court's version of the reasonable man doctrine for police. The landmark case of Graham versus Connor. I'm held to the standard of not were you right, were you reasonable? Did you act as a reasonable, trained, experienced officer would have done in the exact same situation, knowing what that officer knew? If so, the lawsuit will very likely be dismissed, and I will, in all probability, either be held harmless from the beginning without going through the ordeal, and the department exempted from the lawsuit, or we'll go to trial and I'll almost certainly win. The reason is, remember I said there's that public perception that if you entered the situation, you were the one who was looking for trouble.
Right.
If you think about it, the very definition of police patrol is looking for trouble.
That's true, yeah.
It's true. My job. That's what the government employs 800,000 of us to do around the country and sends us to do. When you have done it on your own, if it turns out right, you're the heroic Samaritan. If it does not, you become the self-appointed vigilante.
So it's a feast or famine proposition.
Yeah, I think it bites. I think it's unfair. I think the absolute reality of it is that is the tenor of how society looks at that right now in America today.
Yeah. Good point. Well, now that brings up another issue. Somebody actually, when they knew I was coming here to Mag 40, wanted me to ask you about this. They asked me, they wanted to know, what if the attacker is a female and you've got to use your firearm in self-defense? The fact that she's female, does that change it at all? Does it change the dynamics at all?
This would be your attacker when you respond in self-defense?
Yeah.
Okay, the answer is...
What if a woman's pointing a gun at me, threatening to kill me?
Well, she stopped being a female when she picked up the gun, and she essentially became a gun-wielding lethal threat. Ask anyone who works in the counter-terrorist community how many of the various insane militants who commit some of the most vile atrocities are female. The gun, by definition, is an equalizer. It's been so since really the dawn of private ownership of firearms in civilized society. The good news is it makes your 5 foot tall female absolutely the equal to the 250 pound, 600, 6'5" creature from the testosterone swamp. The downside is when you get the occasional female psycho, the gun is an equalizer, and despite the societal assumption that women must always be protected and only men are aggressive, in that situation you will have to fight her. If she resists hard enough, you will have to hurt her, and if she shoots at you, you will have to shoot her to death.
But that's interesting, Mass, because, okay, first of all, I come from a background where I was taught you don't hurt women. And, most decent men do come from that background. Furthermore, if I'm taken to court and that jury of quote-unquote peers, even though I know they're really not my peers, and that jury says, okay, well, Bob Main, he's 5'10 and a half, and I'll go ahead and admit it, I'm 198 pounds, I shouldn't be, but I am. And she's 5'1 and 130 soaking wet. Why did he have to use his gun against this woman? What's going to happen to me?
Well, in the hypothetical you gave me, she had a gun.
Right.
And when they say, well, gee, we thought a real man like the Lone Ranger would just kick the gun out of her hand and do something like that. The day after tomorrow, Bob, when you shoot your qualifier and the staff shoots their pace setter, you will honestly be able to say, I saw 5 foot nothing, 130-pound Gail Pepin outshoot me and about 30 other fellow creatures from the testosterone swamp. And, sir, I knew I was in as much danger as a German soldier from one of the many Russian female snipers who laid waste to the invaders in World War II.
Yeah.
And I knew if I was ever going to see the people I loved again, I'd have to do something.
Okay, now what if she doesn't have a gun? What if she's got a bat? What if she's got another a knife? An object that could be a deadly weapon, but she's a lot smaller than I am. I have to use my gun in self-defense. I show up in court. What do you think the jury's going to think?
We had one of those cases. I was the lead expert on deadly force, and at my request, the defense counsel brought in Graciela Casillas. You may have heard her on Alex Haddock's podcast.
I did. I heard that entire interview, yes.
She demonstrated to the jury, sending chills up her spine, what a woman could do with a knife, and that jury acquitted the man that shot that woman who was tragically was in the grip of a psychotic break, had already slashed the man and was trying to kill him and his little girl. The jury acquitted.
Well, good.
Remember, the weapon is a force multiplier. And we go back to that good news and bad news. The good news is it makes someone Gale size absolutely equal to the destruction of that creature from the testosterone swamp. If the petite female goes insane, is Bonnie Parker. Bonnie Parker, according to the records, was 4 feet 10 inches tall and weighed less than 100 pounds. And she and her consort, Clyde Barrow, left a trail of dead police officers and dead innocent victims before the two of them were finally gunned down in 1934 in Louisiana. There were witnesses who said she stood over a wounded, dying police officer laughing maniacally as she blew his brains out on the sidewalk as he lay helpless with a sawed-off shotgun. There were not a whole lot of folks who cried too very hard for Bonnie Parker. It's a societal presumption that you'll have to overcome. But if you look at all the societal presumptions that the armed citizen has to overcome,
yeah,
you're a New Yorker who maybe came to political sentience at the time of Mayor John Lindsay, who famously said, if you're a good person, you wouldn't carry a gun. Shortly before, New York Magazine published the list of concealed carry permit holders, which included Mayor Lindsay, but I digress.
Isn't that a coincidence?
But we have, right now in our jury pool, a huge percentage of our society that has grown up being brainwashed by both the news media and the entertainment media.
Oh, yeah.
That anyone who would use a gun for self-defense is bad, is evil, vigilante, and must be punished.
And that varies state by state, it seems like it.
No, I think you'll find it everywhere.
Really?
I honestly think you'll find it everywhere. The lightweight yuppies are not exclusive to the so-called blue states.
It's true.
And remember, in a red state, even if you're in Arizona, you'll find enough lightweight yuppies once the jury selection is done to convict you. There is no more gun-friendly state population-wise than Arizona. Ask your listeners if they remember what the jury did to Harold Fish.
That's true. That's true. You're right. So, this I've heard you answer this on other podcasts before, and some of the speeches, but in case people haven't heard it, speak to the people that say, as long as it was a good shoot, I'm going to be okay. I knew you would laugh.
Oh, God.
I knew you would, but people say that. As long as it was a righteous shoot or a good shoot, whatever terminology they want to give it.
Yeah, well, I hear people say a good shoot is a good shoot. I hear some cute little people say, Santa is coming to bring me presents, and the Easter Bunny will bring me eggs. The only difference seems to be the age group. Basically, both of them are dealing with fantasy. It's not a good shoot until society has determined it's a good shoot. The guys who believe in that say, well, every single case you cite was a questionable shoot. And I answer that with one simple question. What do you suppose it takes to turn your good shoot into a questionable shoot? And the answer is quite simply, a question. The question will be raised by the attorneys for the family of the deceased. It will be raised by other parties, other entities who have some stake in making an example of people who defend themselves.
Right.
And the next thing you know, you are in the nightmare.
Even if it really was a good shoot, in court it can be turned into a question, correct? Is that what you're saying?
What you've got to remember is, particularly in the civil side, any fantasy that the other side comes up with, that even if it's 180 degrees from the plausible truth, when it's uttered by an attorney, is dignified by our system as plaintiff's theory of the case, and it's treated in front of the jury as if it could be every bit as plausible as the actual truth that you are putting forward. We've seen this again and again. You know, an unarmed man slain by jackbooted thugs. And not until trial does it come out the innocent man, the poor unarmed motorist, was trying to crush a police officer to death with a speeding car that would have done far more damage to his body than anything the officer could have done if he had emptied his gun into the perpetrator. But not until it's explained to the jury do we get the acquittal. And that is months, often even years, after the incident, with the family going through this terrible ordeal, the family never really recovering from the media blitz of the other side holding their press conferences about the evil jackbooted thug, blah, blah, blah. Simply transpose the jackbooted thug in uniform and the innocent victim of the America was spelled with a K, Gestapo, to now he's the poor young man who is just turning his life around, and the crazed gun nut,
give me a break,
acted out his sick, murderous fantasies and set up a situation where he tried to shoot him and get away with it.
Well, and you mentioned that in class today. You know, you mentioned that even though we're here at Mag 40, we compete in IDPA, a lot of us, or USPSA, or we've been to other training classes, and we're going to be perceived, we're going to be painted as these gun nuts that like to go to the range and learn how to shoot people, right?
You absolutely will be, and that's why you need to be prepared to answer that question. You need to be able to show from the beginning that in a state that may have had hundreds of thousands of concealed carry permits issued, you are one of the tiny percentage who took the attendant responsibility so seriously. You took time and money out of your life to be trained by the same people who train the cops and the police instructors to test your skills against the best in the world, to hone those skills so if, God forbid, you ever had to fire that gun, you would not miss and hit an innocent bystander. And when the jury hears that, the light bulb turns on and it's like, duh, that makes sense to me.
That right there is worth the price of admission.
In that case, your surcharge for the rest of the course will be in the mail in an envelope.
Uh-oh, I opened my big trap and I got myself in trouble.
I love it when that happens.
Mass thanks, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to have you here, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the course.
I will. You're gonna run us through the ringer for two more days.
You'd think less of me if I didn't.
Thanks, Mass.
Thank you, brother. Well, many thanks to Masada Yub. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you got a little bit out of that. He's talking about some callers who called into my other podcast called the Handgun World Podcast. I have a voicemail set up there, and people call in sometimes with some questions. But I kind of prefaced the questions before I had him answer them. So I think you got a lot from that. And I hope that you got as much from listening to it as I did when I did the interview. Mossad, thanks very much. I appreciate that. He goes by Mass. He's a heck of a shooter, by the way. He's very, very good. All right, let me just close by saying this. These podcasts are free, and I don't have sponsors on this show. This podcast is entirely supported by listeners. I like to keep it that way. I've actually turned away sponsors. I don't believe in that because I don't want it to get real commercial. I don't want to start playing a bunch of sponsor commercials and wasting your time with all that. And I just like to be as independent and free as I possibly can. But if I help you in any way, if these shows benefit you, if they help you get better prepared in your everyday life, would you consider, if you can find it within your heart, would you consider helping out the show a little bit, helping me out financially? I have put together some custom podcasts, some premium podcasts, called the Survival Champions Club. And there are two of them featuring some guests, some listeners from this show that talk about everything from first aid to knife sharpening to using herbs, growing herbs and things like that for survival. And you'll benefit a lot from it, folks. So it's about 3 hours worth of material for only $20. I'm sorry, that's a different one I was thinking about. $20 for 3 hours worth of material. Do the math. It's not very expensive. Plus, you get to keep it forever. Do whatever you want with it. Burn it to a CD or put it on a flash drive and give it to somebody as a gift. I don't care. It's only $20. Just go to todayssurvival.com. Go to the website, todayssurvival.com, and click the link that says Survival Champions Club. And follow the directions. Once you make the investment, I will email you a link to a separate website where you can download it, and then you can do whatever you want. You can save it onto your iPod and listen to it, your MP3 player, your Droid phone, your iPhone, whatever device you use to listen to shows like this, or just save it on your computer, whatever you want to do with it. It's yours to keep. $20, over 3 hours worth of information, todayssurvival.com. Also, please consider joining the forum. It's a small forum, but I kind of like to keep it that way. You know, because it's a well-controlled forum, we don't engage in personal attacks or ridicule. I just ask that you do me a favor. Send me an email if you sign up for the forum. Bob@todayssurvival.com. Bob@todayssurvival.com. Email me and tell me that you signed up. Give me the username or the email that you used. I ask you to do this because I'm keeping out spammers. If you're listening to the show and you send me the email, then I know that you're not a spammer, okay? So, send me that. If you sign up for the forum, please consider joining. It's a good group of people that like to converse with you. All right, that's it, folks. Thanks for listening to another episode of Today's Survival Show. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Mossad Ayoub from Mossad Ayoub Group and the author of In the Gravest Extreme and many other books and many other videos and DVDs and so forth. It's my goal to help you do what you can with what you have wherever you are. I'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.